This podcast is a part of the Wildcat Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Popcat, where we talk about everything video games, TV, movies, and just general pop culture. Joining me, we have Mark Albers and Griffin Presno.
Hey, that's us.
That's me.
Mark, you're a first on the podcast, so why don't you tell the people a bit about yourself?
Mark Albers. I'm currently a junior in the electronic media department here at Wayne State College, and I'm currently a producer for one of the student films here we have on the Hot Attic production company.
And then Griffin, you are also involved in the student film with the Hot Attic production.
Yes, I am. We did two movies this semester, and I was the writer, and I'm one of the directors for the other movie.
All right, and we'll get into that in just a bit. But where you can see all the films we're going to talk about on Tuesday, April 6th at 7 p.m. at the Majestic Theater, they're going to be showing Sigmund and Dora, which is Shelby Hagerton's senior film.
Her senior thesis.
Something Lost, and Connor and Annie, and A Day with Lily, which is why I have you two here.
Yeah.
So... Griffin, why don't you start us off? Why don't you tell the people a little bit about the two films you're involved in?
I'm only involved in one.
Oh.
Yeah. There's two films we're going to be talking about today. Connor and Annie and The Red String of Fate. The one I'm working on is called The Red String of Fate. It is a story that I wrote after I watched a lot of old Japanese movies and a few newer ones. And I got this idea off of Japanese folklore about how there's this old proverb that two lovers are connected by a red string and it's always getting shorter. And so I decided to make a script about that, but the string is a literal thing for when you're close to your love of your life. And for a while I was really having trouble writing this.
Mm-hmm.
I was really struggling to find an angle to come from. And so after watching a few things and after coming up with a few ideas of inspiration, I decided to make it an LGBT story. And I decided to make it about a young boy who finds himself attached to another young boy. They're both in high school and they meet each other. And for the first half of the movie, the main character is kind of scared of all this, of people finding out about his sexuality. And I like it. I think it was a good script. Not to pat myself on the back, but
sometimes you got to do that though.
Yeah.
Especially when I wrote Lovesick, which was a previous Hot Attic film. I had a bit of that where I was with the idea, it's just there's nothing wrong with liking your own ideas. You just got to be super open with it. So, Mark, why don't you tell us a bit about Connor and Annie?
Yeah, Connor and Annie was actually written by my good friend Blake Baldlack, and he wrote the film, and it's kind of about two friends and their relationship. Something happens to Connor that makes him just keep away from everybody, push everybody out of his life, and this is the story of just how they kind of rekindle that friendship and come together after these hard events happen to them in their lives. But it's sort of supposed to be written like a slice of life film. Nothing super major happens, but it's just supposed to be a nice feel-good movie where you get to see two people and just live out an important moment in their lives, and you get to experience that sort of situation with them and their humanity.
Right.
And it's a big part about that whole deal.
Right. And I asked you the other day, actually, I was like, isn't this a romance? It's a friend man.
Yeah, no. It wasn't written to be a romance. It was just supposed to focus on them coming back together. Honestly, it's mostly
a platonic romance.
Yeah, and honestly, it's kind of up to the audience and how they see this relationship. We don't really give anybody anything to latch onto and make a a super big decision. And honestly, most of the people we've shown the film already have different opinions on how their relationship, you know, works. And, you know, honestly, we had a couple of people think that Connor, our one of our main guy, should be a homosexual, should be gay. So, yeah, honestly, it's really up to the audience's perception, excuse me.
Right. And I know, like, when Blake explained it, like, took a lot of pride in what he had written, which was a good thing. But it's, like, it's appreciated, I feel, when the writer doesn't hold the audience's hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, and especially with Red String, like, I'm assuming, like, it's one of those things where it's just, like, you start out, here's the concept, and you just gotta go with it. Like, you don't spend too much time.
Yeah, there's a beginning scene where we explain it, but we're like, but like when the character explains it, he's like, yeah, I know this is, I took sixth grade health like everyone else.
Like, it's the world of the movie, you just gotta go with it.
Yeah.
And I honestly like that. I love that about the Red String and your script, Griffin. I think that's awesome how you just kind of throw us into this sort of mirror world where it's like ours, but it's just slightly different in how people find love, and it's not completely up to them, you know. And it's just, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people who have come to me with like different questions about it, and you know, I usually have answers, but there's been a few people who have asked me something, and I'm just like, huh, did not think of that.
But no, it must feel great to just get in and be able to create something like this. Mark, you being a junior, why don't you explain, like, how it feels? Like, this obviously isn't your first go-around, but being this far into the program, how do you feel?
I love it. Honestly, getting in there and actually being able to create something with just people you really, really are fond of, and getting to work as a team with people that I personally handpicked my team, and I love every single one of them, and I think they're just a great group of guys and girls, and I'm just so excited to see it all coming together, and it's honestly the best part. I mean, usually you get to be in the project, but that doesn't mean you're always in the project. I mean, but it's really fun to be part of the commanding units, I guess. I don't really know how to describe it, but get to see everything come together and you finally get to see it on the stage. It's the best, not the stage, the screen. It's the best part.
Right. And Griffin, this is your first time in the semester, correct?
Yeah, this is my first time working in the video workshop in the film department up here. Yeah. Right.
And how does it feel just being able to, because you have a more theater background.
Yeah. Well, to be perfectly honest, coming up here, starting out as a writer and a director feels like I'm like a goldfish in the Atlantic Ocean. Like there's a lot of people in there who like definitely know what they're doing. And I'm just sort of over here like, I wrote the thing.
No, it does. Like, it does feel that way sometimes, or it's just like it's understandable to be like, oh, but it's one of those things, like, you just realize, like, okay, here's what I have to do, like you said, Mark, it's just like, I get to work as a part of a team with people I respect, and things like that, and you really get, like, eventually you get the push and pull down, and you'll realize, like, okay, this person can help out with this, and really help you out in places where you really need that secureness. But now, I'm sure we're all going to be looking our best at the film festival.
Oh, yeah, going to be iced out.
The premiere.
Definitely.
Going to be dripped out to the tens.
Oh, jeez, Griffin.
Might break out a tuxedo t-shirt, who knows?
Oh, my gosh.
But no, in television and streaming news.
Oh, boy.
A lot of people were angry that Dr. Oz was on Jeopardy, because ever since Alex Trebek, may he rest in peace, they've been doing kind of a, what you want to call it?
They've been like cycling through guests.
Yeah, they've been cycling through guests, like people come and be like, here's how much Alex meant to me, and so I'm doing this. And they had Katie Couric and Ken Jennings. And then one other person, and then Dr. Oz. People were like, "No."
I, I don't think it's more of Dr. Oz being on Jeopardy. I think it's more of the persona Dr. Oz has created for himself.
And that persona being on Jeopardy.
Yeah. Mostly because Dr. Oz, to put it politely, is a snake oil salesman.
Yeah, he's like, here's how, the one trick to lose weight. Like, I'd see him on the little magazines at Walmart and stuff like that.
And then he's before the Supreme Court going, there is no one way to lose weight in a week.
But no, I put this on the list because who would you like to see host an episode of Jeopardy?
Ooh, that's a tough one. just having Will Ferrell do his best Alex Trebek.
That would be nice. Jeopardy.
Please.
And, like, I feel like not now because, you know, Alex Trebek, the wound is still
kind of
there.
It needs more time.
Yeah. But after a few time, I think it could be a good episode to do.
No, even, like, we'll do one as Will Ferrell as himself.
Yeah.
And then one Will Ferrell as Trebek, like, down the road.
Yeah, I think trying to get a couple comedians on there could be good.
Right. What about you, Mark? Who would you think would be a good fit for Jeopardy?
Oh, geez. I think Griffin hit the nail on the head with Will Ferrell. And I feel like Will Ferrell has become very close with Alex Trebek. I mean, not always in the way people would know, but, I mean, he's embodied that character for years.
Right.
And I feel like that loss, he also would feel pretty bad. And maybe we'd get some nice kind of like testimony.
No, one that I was really behind, I'd like to see him as a guest host of Jeopardy, but I'd also love to see him as the main host going on now, is LeVar Burton, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
Because a lot of people, like, ran with the Twitter campaign. They were like, we need to get LeVar Burton to be the Jeopardy host.
Yeah, I could see him becoming the new
Like, he'd be a
host.
Perfect fit. Like, because you have that, like, all these, like, intellectual people and celebrities and everybody from different walks of life. And it's just, like, up there, it's like, Jeopardy. And Reading Rainbow is not too far. Like, people, everybody grew up with that.
Everyone grew up with Reading Rainbow.
But no.
And TNG.
And TNG. But next up, with some news I didn't get to cover, Pedro Pascal got cast as Joel in the adaptation of The Last of Us for HBO.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I think I'm a lot more... What's the word? I'm a lot more willing to trust that than the casting for Ellie that I heard.
Mm-hmm.
I heard they were casting, what was
Bella Ramsey, also from Game of Thrones.
She was like the little girl who they severely overused. I can't really see her as an Ellie, if I'm being perfectly honest. Maybe like when they show the characters, when they show the actors in their outfits. When they start releasing promotional material.
Yeah,
stuff.
That'll be the thing. Like, I'm already hyped for it, but when I also feel like I'll have a better way to feel about it when we do start seeing promotional material and things like that.
I'm honestly curious about how they're going to be able to adapt that. I mean, because there's a lot of stuff in the Last of Us that would be fairly difficult to put into a...
Because a couple weeks back,
live action.
Yeah. Like, I did see... them be like, no, we're going to cut stuff out and things like that. Like,
because
there are things, like, in the game where it's just like, okay, obviously, like, Pedro Pascal doesn't need to move a dumpster for 10 minutes trying to figure out a puzzle.
They got to have the ladder. They got to have Pedro Pascal picking up a ladder. And then grabbing the ladder, then using it as a bridge, and then taking the ladder and using it again.
I'd be down for that, or the swimming.
Yeah,
but they also got to be careful because if they take too much out, it's not really gonna feel like a worthy adaptation.
Right,
and that's where you get the backlash from the fans. I mean, video game fans are some of the most fickle people you could ever try to make something for.
Hard to please.
Yeah, definitely very hard to please. So it'll be interesting.
But in all honesty, like I feel this is kind of the way to go because every time there's been a movie adaptation. It hasn't been good.
No.
Or even... No, that's it, period. It hasn't been good. And so I do feel that long-form, like, television shows or miniseries is the way to go with this.
I think a big problem as well with video game movies is just not understanding the IP.
Right.
That's true.
Like, there are movies like Detective Pikachu or Sonic the Hedgehog, where it was people who clearly understood the IP, and so people hold those movies in a high regard. But then you've got something like the Monster Hunter movie that just came out.
Right.
Where it was like U.S. military soldiers are teleported to the world of Monster. Yeah, through the world of Monster Hunter. Now they have to use their machine guns to fight a Rathalos. It's right. Like, no. Give them a big sword. Give them some kooky armor. And a talking cat who's cute.
Right. Like, I feel if more of these video game adaptations just leaned into, like, oh, here's what people like about the video game. Like, about its story. They could really get to that.
So you're telling me you didn't like the Resident Evil movies?
I have not seen any of the Resident Evil movies.
Oh, my gosh.
But most video game adaptations I've seen, I haven't been too pleased with.
Those movies are directed by Mila Jovovich's husband. And guess who stars in those movies as their own OC?
Mila Jovovich. Wow.
Yep.
No, because that was the thing when the Monster Hunter movie came out, and I was like, was it directed by her husband also?
Possibly. He's done so many Resident Evil movies.
That's the thing, though. I was like, he's not, like, I love Mila Jovovich, Fifth Element's a great movie, but her husband isn't the best director. Or ex-husband, I don't know how it is at this point.
There is another video game adaptation that's kind of flown under the radar recently. April 9th, the first episode for the anime adaptation of the video game World Ends With You is coming out.
Mm.
Yeah, that's looking really good.
What's that going to be on?
I think they're going to be...
Like, is it like a streaming thing? Or?
Yeah, it's going to be simulcasted. Simulcasting is when it airs in Japan, and then a anime streaming service will get it up on the episode up on their website like in a couple hours later, because they have to translate everything. So that's going to be on the Funimation.
So what you're telling me is like somebody might see it on Toonami or something.
Probably not Toonami because it takes a little bit longer to dub it, and Toonami prefers to usually have the English dubs. As opposed to what would be going up would be just subtitles.
Right.
Yeah. World Ends With You is really good. If you are an angsty teenager, it's perfect for you.
Right. But no, going on to the world of Disney Plus, they decided to increase their price by $7.99 up to $7.99, not by an additional $7.99.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thought Disney would be greedy?
Honestly, I feel like this is coming, like, COVID made it excusable. Like, with all the pandemic money and all that stuff, like, they were like, hey, let's just raise it a bit more. And honestly, like, I don't know, people are way more, I think they know people got critical when Netflix, anytime they would increase the price.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a while before we see the next price increase. But I do think they're going to do it slowly and gradually.
I mean, I don't think it's, like, that much higher than their competition. I mean, isn't Hulu $7.99 too?
I believe so, but...
Yeah.
But true, you also have the... I think it's $12.99 for the bundle with Hulu, ESPN, and Disney+. So yeah. I think them raising the price is also going to push people to just get the bundle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they want to want you to think.
The one thing that Disney Plus did that really annoyed me, and I don't think I ever hear people talk about this, but like when it first came out, they were giving away a year for free if you were subscribed to Verizon or whatever. So I was like, oh, cool, a free year of Disney Plus so we can watch all the new shows coming out. And then they did The Mandalorian and then nothing else for a full year.
Yeah.
And then they did like two episodes of The Mandalorian and then your year expires. So yeah, then Mandalorian and then... 2 weeks later, WandaVision, and then 2 weeks later, Falcon and Winter Soldier. So that when you have to pay, now you're missing out.
Speaking of Falcon and Winter Soldier, Mark, what did you think of this first episode?
I personally, Yeah, I've heard a lot of different things about it, and I personally really liked it. I mean, you got to look past the fact that it's the filler episode that, you know, that introduces all the characters and the issues and the difficulties they have in their lives.
Right.
But you get to see the setup, and that honestly, that's the most important part, because that's how you get connected to these characters that didn't, in all honesty, didn't have a lot of screen time in the actual movies.
Right.
If you think about it, Bucky Barnes went missing for 100 years. He comes back, he's evil for half of his screen time, and then the rest of it, he just, you know,
goes missing.
He goes missing.
For another
exactly.
couple years.
He goes
and
on
Falcon,
an African retreat.
He has one or two cameos in Ant-Man, and other than that, he's outshadowed by the better people on the team.
Right.
So, honestly, I like seeing these people and having a little bit of their lives. I love to see Bucky in his vulnerable place trying to make amends and live in this modern world. I mean, you get to see all these steps that he had to go through that we also kind of get to see Steve go through as his movies progress as well, because he went through kind of the similar things, you know, getting used to modern day life, you know,
right.
getting over the past, you know, the stuff he can't control. But no, honestly, I liked it a lot. I also really like the reveal at the end of USA Agent.
We might not want to spoil it too much
for the
general public.
Oh, bad. I'm so sorry.
Reveal at the end
of the US Agent, like, there's something with the US Agent at the end of the episode.
Very much so, yes.
It's very, like, it's really like, oh, here are the stakes. Like, here's what the whole series is going to be about.
I love that setup where they get, where it's just going to be a big old thing.
Well, I can get to that in a second, but Mark, what are your predictions for next episode?
I am excited to see more introductions. You see a few villain introductions in the first episode, but you never really get an idea of who they are. You mainly just get to see a flashy costume, some throwing around of some, you know, generic good guys like police officers. You never really get to see who these characters are, what their intentions, and I'm excited to see what those are coming the second episode.
Not to out-nerd you guys, but that whole helicopter fight, the character he was fighting was Batroc the Leaper.
I caught that as
from,
well,
yep.
And I love
that. Captain America,
so
Winter Soldier.
It was a bit of a Winter Soldier reunion,
honestly.
He was wearing like a purple-yellow striped outfit. He jumps up to punch him. I was like, is that Batroc?
It was honestly great to see that introduction of a very classic villain. Like,
yeah.
Batroc the Leaper has been around since Captain America was in World War II.
Right.
So it was really great to see him get some representation and to see, you know, that edgy Marvel remake. It was just great. I love it.
But no, honestly, like, I could really see, like, they're going to get in. Like, I could see them getting into, like, talking, like, they already did have a bit, like, okay, we're kind of talking about race and things like that. And it's just, like, I feel they'll eventually get to the fact, like, he gave up the shield and then they gave it to somebody else.
And
I could see them being like, well, we couldn't give it to you because, you know, like, and, like, it's going to get, like, like, I feel like Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, they're going to have some difficult discussions, but it's going to be wrapped in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it's definitely looking like there's going to be stuff like, you know, race, PTSD.
Social commentary,
like
that sort of thing.
I really liked, one of the smaller scenes that I really enjoyed was Falcon struggling to even just get a loan from the bank, even though he's an Avenger.
Right. No, because that was the thing I told my roommate. I was like, wait a minute, did Tony Stark not pay these people? And when he was like, no, it's all goodwill. And I'm like, yeah, dude, but you're a superhero. Like, I get it, you're a superhero, but you at least have to be like, hey, like, give me, like, however much a president makes, like, or something.
Back in the day, I wrote a script about that, about a bunch of superheroes who, like, are faking catastrophes to make it so that the government will pay, make it so that the government think there's more of a need for superheroes.
Right.
So that they will, like, use government funds to pay for superhero lodgings and stuff.
But no, like, in a little bit of a spoiler alert for WandaVision, but when you see, like, what's so important about the house in Westview.
Yeah.
I told, and with Vision being involved and you see his name on the deed, I was like, I told my roommate, I was like, Wait, so some bank, like, Vision went to a bank.
Vision got a loan from a bank, but the Falcon can't.
Yeah, I was like, he was like, well, Tony Stark probably paid for the whole thing, but I was like...
Yeah, I'm sure Jarvis, like, has Tony's sign.
Like, I just
want to
know, I'm like, how does he have
account?
That house? Like, who did he get the money from if Tony Stark's not paying everybody?
I'm sure Vision has the Stark Industries bank account info saved in.
Right.
Tony didn't want to always have to type it in every time, so he just saved it to Jarvis. But, well, I have to say, my big problem with the ending of WandaVision...
Mm-hmm. We gotta be spoiler careful.
I just gotta say, where was Doctor Strange?
No, he was really...
That's all I gotta say.
No, he was really holding the bag. Like, he never wanted to show up.
No, where was he? Like, I just wanted to have a scene of just him at the deli with Wong. And Wong is like, did you hear about that giant magical entity in
that
Jersey?
That thing that happened in New Jersey?
And Doctor Strange is like, Jersey? And just takes a bite.
Maybe he's just kicking his feet up after Avengers Endgame. He's like, yeah. I saved the world. I can take some time off.
Okay. But he is the Sorcerer Supreme. He's got to look out for everything.
True, but I don't know. Like, if you save the universe, you
get a day off.
You get a day off. Or a week.
Yeah.
But no,
you don't get a paycheck, though, apparently.
With what they've set up in this first episode, how do you feel? What are some of your predictions for the rest of the series?
I've got a few. Obviously, we know that Zemo is going to be coming back.
Right.
He's got the, what are they called, balaclavas? He's got the big mask.
Big Zemo purple Zemo head sock.
Yep. I think it's going to be a lot of... Oh, we don't get along now, but by episode 7, we'll start working together more.
No, I do think, like, a lot of these Marvel properties now, like WandaVision, like, the big theme is, like, grief and getting past everything. And yeah. I feel like the same is going to be with Falcon Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I would, this is, well, if Black Widow had come out
right.
before this, like, planned, that would have been this is a very different start. This is phase 4, right, of the MCU?
Or phase 4.
I would just call it Era 2 or whatever.
Like, this is like, okay, we're picking ourselves back up from the ashes and creating something new.
Yeah, and I think I like how this is like sort of a small way to start it back up.
Right.
You know, it doesn't... My problem with DC movies, and we can move into the Snyder Cut with this, is that every single time... Everyone is fighting something. Like, every time Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman has to fight something...
It has to be a world-ending
The
threat.
Fate of the universe is in the balance.
Right.
And then you've got, like, Spider-Man Far From Home, where the main villain is a guy who sells alien guns. And even Tony Stark is like, yeah, we'll call the CIA.
He's like, hey, man, this is... Like, it's big, but it's not big enough for you to deal with.
Yeah.
Like. No, but, like, exactly with the, coming from two guys who have not seen the Snyder Cut, we're about to talk about the Snyder Cut.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's got a 73, from critics on Rotten Tomatoes, which is higher than I thought it would get, honestly. I thought it'd be, like, a 63.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of, like, I think a lot of it is people, appreciating Zack Snyder getting to make the movie he did.
Right, yeah.
Because, for people who don't know...
He had tragedy. And...
Yes, he had a family tragedy, so he had to leave the shooting of the theatrical cut, of what became the theatrical cut. They had to bring in Joss Whedon, and they completely changed the movie. And if you ever see the theatrical cut of Justice League, it is horrible, and you want to scoop your eyes out with a spoon.
But that's the thing, though. Like, I already put 2 hours into a Justice League movie... And now I'm asked to put double that. Like, I know nobody's forcing me to watch it.
I put 2 hours into a Justice League movie and found zero enjoyment.
Right.
And I don't think I'm going to find much more enjoyment
in a
four-hour
version
with some of the same stuff.
I was like, I watched The Irishman, and I do like Scorsese, and I love the movie, but I'm like, that's because, like, there's no Zack Snyder goodwill where I'm like, no, I can't watch a four-hour cut. I'm sorry.
If Scorsese made a 4-hour movie, I'd watch it twice.
Oh, yeah.
But Zack Snyder? No. But interestingly, he made it 4x3. Did you know about this?
Yeah, I've seen the memes about the aspect ratio.
He made a 4x3. He's releasing a black and white cut. He's just getting as pretentious as possible.
Yeah,
it's
he's
his
like,
last one.
I think this was like they gave it to him just so they could shut people up.
Well,
I don't think they're gonna give him another set of movies.
Well, the problem I think that making this movie, I think the reason they made it was because, you know, there was a pandemic.
Right.
No one can make movies, and they're just like, hey, we've got
3/4 of a movie done.
We've got 4/5 of a movie done. Let's give him a few more million, and we can put that on our new streaming service. But I think that this is a much more, I don't want to say dangerous, but like it's sort of playing into the hands of a kind of toxic fan base that you see online.
Yeah.
You know, people are just always screaming about the Snyder Cut, like every couple weeks. And they would like harass people who would say that Zack Snyder movies weren't that good. And so I think it is playing into the hand of a sort of dangerous demographic. And now you see trending all over Twitter, you see stuff like Restore the Snyderverse, or people are saying release the Ayer cut of Suicide Squad.
Right. No, like, and that's the thing. I would have preferred an Ayer cut instead of a Snyderverse cut.
Yeah.
I don't know, but going on from that and other DC news, Pierce Brosnan has been cast as Dr. Fate in DC's Black Adam movie. And that was a big shock. He's not an actor I would have expected to ever have been in a superhero movie.
No, let alone Dr. Fate.
Or playing a superhero. Like, I could see him being like, oh, he's some foreign prime minister. But he's Dr. Fate.
He's Dr. Fate. That means well, if they're still making stuff in a universe, then they got to have him tied down.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like, I feel like the Flash movie is going to reset everything. And then they'll be able to pick, like, okay, I want to keep this. I don't want to keep that.
Yeah, I think I would say there has not been a good DC movie since, since The Dark Knight Rises, there's not been a good DC movie besides Shazam.
Me personally, I liked Birds of Prey.
I actually never saw it. I've heard it's fine.
It's pretty decent.
Yeah, so I wouldn't hold that against you.
Like,
I've heard
it's
fine.
The fights are good. The filming is good.
Yeah, it was directed by
good.
John Wick guy, right? One of the John Wick directors?
I think the
fight choreographer.
Or something like that.
Which, I mean, that's...
But they definitely took inspiration in there.
If you had to get one person from the John Wick crew, probably the fight choreographer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I really like Shazam, so seeing a sequel to Shazam and a, I guess, spinoff about Shazam's arch-rival Black Adam.
Yeah, that's the thing. Okay, we're going to have a Black Adam movie. He's not going to be in, Shazam's probably going to be in a post-credit scene in that movie, but I was like, man, they've made a big deal about this. Also, with Brosnan being Dr. Fate. Like, I know they have the issue, like, where they, like, oh, we really got this A-list handsome actor. And, like, the Spider-Man issue is just, like, he's constantly taking off his mask.
Yeah.
Like, no actor, it's not like Carl Urban and Judge Dredd, where it's, like, his helmet's on that entire movie. He didn't care, because he wasn't going to be a prima donna about it.
Yeah. I hope Pierce Brosnan plays a good Dr. Fate. Dr. Fate's a really cool character.
Right.
I don't know as much about him as I'd like to. I know he's kind of like the Doctor Strange of the DC, where he's like controlling everything, sort of.
But no, I feel the Black Adam movie is going to be okay-ish.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Dwayne Johnson's invested enough into it to where he's like, this is going to happen and it's going to be good.
If it has enough of the stuff from Shazam that I liked, which it probably won't, because what I liked about Shazam was how it was so lighthearted, and it was like, you know, it kind of felt like something like The Goonies.
Right.
Or 2000 Spider-Man, where it just sort of had this sort of fun feeling to it.
Like, it's like a, it's a kids on bikes movie.
Kids on bikes.
But it's also, like, a superhero movie.
Yeah, with like, and, like, the villain is, like, a bunch of big, scary monsters. I was like, yeah, that's, but I was like, that's cute.
Speaking of Shazam, the sequel, another actor who I did not expect to ever be in a superhero movie is Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
As Hespera, and I know nothing about that character.
Me neither. I'm assuming it's got to do with the gods and their fury.
Right.
Since that is the subtitle.
No, but I could see it being, because Helen Mirren handles comedy pretty well. So I imagine it'll be like kind of how Shazam is with Mark Strong. Like that juxtaposition. Like, it'll be like, oh, like Zachary Levi is in a completely different movie than Helen Mirren is in. Like, it'll feel that way. Like,
yeah, I'm excited to see little Billy Batson fight the gods. That's his name, right?
Yeah,
Billy Batson.
But no, I haven't seen Shazam, but
yeah,
that'll be homework for when we're done.
I just want to know how, like, because they can't call him Captain Marvel, probably.
Right. I think they'll make a joke about it. Like, it'll be like, yeah. He'll be like, hey, or he's like, I'm thinking of a new name. And he's like, no. He's like, whatever you're about to say, don't say.
Well, the reason is that how could he tell people what his name is?
True.
They're like, wow, you're so cool with the lightning bolt. What's your name? Shazam.
Did they ever do that joke in the first movie?
I don't think so.
That'd definitely be one. Like, yeah. In the sequel, I bet they'd do it.
But then he'd like just be a little, but then he would reveal, that'd be the way he'd reveal his identity.
Right. But no, in other superhero movie news, Black Widow will premiere on Disney Plus and in theaters on July 9th with a $30 rental fee for premiere access. And they did that with Mulan, and they did that with Rey and the Last Dragon. And honestly, like,
just stop.
I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of that because I just, like, nothing. I either get 10 friends, get 3 friends.
Yeah.
And have everybody chip in $10. But, like, the premiere access is the only thing where I'm like, no. Why do you have to do this? Just put it on Disney Plus and the people that have Disney Plus can have it.
I'm already paying $8 a month just to see it. Now I got to pay $30 on top of that $8 to see it.
Yeah. So if that was the case, like, I know everybody isn't fortunate enough to be able to go to a theater and see it, but I'm like, just at that point, like, $30, I just mask up and go to a theater if it were
just
open.
Double mask.
Hypothetically.
I just double mask, go to a theater. Black Widow. Should be good.
I like that. That's the thing. Like, if you asked me last year, I would have been like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go see it. This and that, but just, like, taking everything, it got moved so much.
Like, this is a full year.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk Black Widow.
I don't know, but in other new movie news, Ghost of Tsushima movie will be developed by the John Wick director.
Yeah.
And that's what, this dude is on a roll.
Yeah. You see, unlike Snyder Cut, I think Ghost of Tsushima deserves a black and white cut.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's exactly what it'd be.
I think it deserves to be in black and white. Or, like, at least have a cut. Like, Logan. Logan had
it. Logan or Mad Max.
Yeah. They had black and white cuts. And, like, I love playing Ghost of Tsushima. Have you played it?
I've watched Ben play it.
Yeah. I love playing that game. I play it in Kurosawa mode, which is makes it black and white.
Right.
Gives like a film grain effect. And I think it gives the audio also like a bit of a grain to make it feel like you're watching an old Akira Kurosawa
like you're watching
movie.
Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
No, but I honestly think this will be the movie that does it. People are like, whoa, that's actually pretty good. Because like people leaning to like the Mortal Kombat movie coming out, they were like, okay, let's get all of these real martial artists and people that are excellent at learning fight choreography.
And let's not have Johnny Cage.
And let's just make a movie.
Let's leave Johnny Cage out of it.
But with the Ghost of Tsushima movie, I would love for them to lean more, like, I don't want it to be like John Wick with Ghost of Tsushima vibes. I want it to be Ghost of Tsushima with John Wick vibes, like all the best parts of them filming a fight.
Yeah,
is what I want to see.
I would say the one issue that I would see is that a lot of the character drama of the game Ghost of Tsushima is that what's the main character's name?
Jin Sakai,
yes. Is that Jin Sakai, who is the samurai, who is the ghost
the
of
the titular
Tsushima.
Ghost of Tsushima.
Yes, he's the ghost of the island Tsushima, fighting off the Mongolian army of Khotun Khan, trying to save his uncle in the first arc of the game. But a lot of his inner struggle is that his methods, the methods of a samurai,
Or, like, him having to be the ghost, like, yeah. It's frowned upon.
Yeah. The methods of being a samurai aren't going to work. But using stealth and getting through there in a way that would work is heavily frowned upon within the samurai aspects. And I think there's a lot of stuff they can do. I hope they do a showdown. Have you ever seen...
Yes, I have.
...been to a showdown, just walk up. You gotta wait for the dude to draw the weapon, and then you just press your button and shink!
No, I feel, like you said, like, talking about that, like, inner struggle with Jin Sakai.
Yeah.
Like, if the movie doesn't have that, it's not gonna be a true adaptation.
Yeah.
Like, the people that love the game will hate it, I feel.
Yeah, if he's just like, okay, I guess I just have to sneak around.
And
he's
cool with doing that and killing indiscriminately.
Yeah, because, like, he meets up with a girl at the start who, like, helps him out to save her brother. And she is, like, she uses stealth for everything. And she's like, you have to get past these samurai ideals or else you will die.
Right.
And so, and, like, the first time you do a stealth kill, I think, in the game, you just have this huge flashback.
Like, they make it super traumatic. Yeah. Like, he's like, this isn't the way, but I have to do this for the meantime.
Yeah.
But
it's
no,
a good game.
In what I like to call the last bit of movie news.
Yeah.
Avatar, there was a re-release of Avatar in China, right?
Yes, China.
And they managed to take back the title of highest grossing movie.
Hey,
and he did do this, sooner, like, I thought it happened sooner after Endgame, honestly.
Yeah, okay. Andrew, we're gonna play a little game here.
Okay.
I have a dollar. Name one character from Avatar.
I know the dude's name is Jake, but I couldn't...
Highest grossing movie of all time.
Tell you his last... That's the thing. Like, I've done that to people before, and I'm like, no, I can't. I could tell you the actors. Couldn't tell you the names.
Yep.
Have you seen Avatar?
When I was 10 years old.
I never saw Avatar.
You never saw Avatar?
Nothing compelled me to want to watch Avatar.
Well, if you don't have a 3D TV, or if you're not watching it in 3D... not really worth
that's the only reason why it got so big, because like it was like it, timing and place of the 3D movie era, and people were like, wow, I can go see it. And I'm not saying the visuals aren't good, but like
it was that,
it's a pretty simple story.
It was that feeling of like you were, it was like
you're
being
immersed.
Whisked away. It was just this huge level of immersion. That's why people loved it,
right?
And now we're gonna have five of them and no one does 3D movies anymore.
Yeah,
so.
No, when he said that I was like, Jim, I think you're a little crazy, man.
Oh, Jimmy Cameron.
No, but in our final movie news topic, the Oscars said no Zoom acceptance at all. And what people called it is the Sudeikis law, because
yeah.
Jason Sudeikis accepted accepted his award over Zoom for Ted Lasso. And I was just, and he was like, looked normal, like you or I would look in a Zoom chat. And so I think they were like, well, no, we're the Oscars. We're titan.
The Oscars.
And we can't.
Man, they're just really trying to give Tom Hanks COVID again, huh?
But no, in all honesty, like, I feel like they're gonna, like, you're gonna see a lot of people having their Oscars accepted by other people.
Yeah.
Because I feel for the most part, you'll see the actors there who are just like, oh, yeah, like, I'm happy to be here, da-da-da-da-da. But other than that, like, I bet you there will be, like, at least a third of the actors or crews will have their Oscars accepted by one person.
Yeah. Who have you watched any of the Best Picture nominated films?
I have not. I've been slacking on that.
Yeah, I've only watched one, Nomadland, which was very good. It was very good.
Right.
I feel like, what's her name? Frances
McDormand.
Frances McDormand, that's what I thought, yeah. I feel like Frances McDormand just every other year just makes an amazing movie. The last one she did that I can remember is Three Billboards, and I love that movie.
Now, I do feel sometimes like there are certain actors who are sitting around every 2 to 3 years, and they're like, yep, I'm going to win an award. And she's one of them.
I'm just going to change the game again.
Because, like, I bet you we will see one more after this where she's just like, okay. And then she'll, like, take a hiatus for a couple years, and then she'll come back.
Yeah. I thought Nomadland was really good, though. It was a really personal story.
No, and I'd be interested to seeing it. That's the one that got a lot of buzz where I was like, okay, I do actually want to see this. And it's on Hulu.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. That's what I like about this year's Oscars. A lot of them you can find on streaming.
Right. And I feel like I could really see them going for that afterwards. Yeah. Like, other than, like, HBO Max, like, any... Well, even then, like, they had so many issues with their own directors once they were like, no, you will be able to see these movies on streaming.
Yeah, yeah, people were mad about that.
But I could see Netflix or Hulu or one of these streaming services in previous years. Or maybe it could be a revolving door like Amazon Prime. Like, every year the person changes.
In all honesty, if the Oscars did a Disney Premier Access where they were like, $30 and you can watch all of the Best Picture nominations. I do that.
But who would the money go to? Would it go to...
Yeah, that'd be the tough part.
Like, would it go to the studio? Like, it'd have to be split among the studios.
Yeah, that'd be the tough part.
But I think it'd be nice for Amazon to be like, hey, we'll, like, next year, 2022 Oscars, here are all the movies.
Yeah.
So you'd be able to watch them all in one place.
Yeah, I wish you could do that. Make it a lot more convenient.
But no, that was episode 10 of PopCat. Thank you for listening. I've been Andrew Suter, and I'd like to thank Griffin for being on.
Yeah, and it was great to have Mark on as well. He had to leave halfway through, unfortunately. But yeah, it was great coming on.
He left early. He doesn't get to be in the wrap-up.
He doesn't exist. We erased him from the timeline.
But no, definitely be sure to go check out the Wildcat film premiere on April 6th at 7 p.m.
Yes.
And there will be Griffin and Mark are going to be taking part in Q&As after the film.
Yes. March 6th, Majestic Theater. What was it, 7 p.m.?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Be there. Yeah, and try and dress up. I know.